Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. In celebrating Black History Month, my guest for this morning is Alan Maxwell. He is the president and CEO of Army2Max, a defense contractor business with 100 employees in 9 states. Alan is also the USA Today and Wall Street Journal best-selling author of The System is Unforgiving, Play by the Rules and Win. Alan is a retired U.S. Navy officer, a former federal employee with over 43 years of federal experience. As a business leader, he has led and developed several personal businesses for the past 20 years. Alan holds a master's degree in computer information system, a bachelor's of science degree in business management, and an associate degree in electronic technologies. He is also certified in the Defense Acquisition Workforce Improvement Act as a Level 3 Program Manager and a Level 3 System Engineer and a member of the Acquisition Workforce Community. Alan and I will be having a conversation about his remarkable life's journey, his multiple award-winning book, and his passion for mentoring students to succeed in life regardless of challenges they face. Good morning, Alan. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, good morning, Johnny. I'm doing great. Doing outstanding. Thank you for
having me. Fantastic. Wonderful, wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you with me, sir. The System is Unforgiving, Play by the Rules and Win is extremely insightful, engaging, and wonderful read. Respectfully, it reminds me of life's journey and the many conversations we have with ourselves about life, love, and laughter, and along the way, of course, tears as well. So thank you for taking the time to compose such an excellent book. Congratulations on this release.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. It was a fun journey.
Wonderful, wonderful, sir. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Sure. Johnny, you know, I grew up in North Philadelphia, probably one of the worst areas in Philadelphia. But, you know, I had a mom and dad that was caring up to a point, and they did what they could to keep us safe. My mom and dad split, and my mother came from a small town in Georgia where she was raised on a farm. And so she took the children, me being the youngest of 7, down to Georgia after her and my dad separated when I was about 11 or 12 years old. Got to Georgia, realized that Southern lifestyle just wasn't for me. Coming from the inner city, going to the deep rural South was certainly a culture shock and certainly something that was a little more than I could have at the time. So as soon as I was able, I took an escape route at the age of 17, joined the Navy, went to California, and been out in California ever since. Started out my Navy career and did 22 years. Started out enlisted, got commissioned as an officer. When I was ready to retire, it was time to get serious and figure out what I was going to do in my next life. So I ended up being a defense contractor, quickly rose to the ranks of a director of operations for a small technology firm. And that wasn't satisfying enough, so I went into the federal government, quickly achieved the grade of GS-15, managing great, large programs worldwide. And that still wasn't scratching my itch, so I decided, rather than becoming a senior executive, I felt that it was time to bet on myself, and I started Omni2Max. And the rest is history, Johnny. So that was the high-level Reader's Digest meeting.
No, fantastic. I'm sure along the way is one of those things where you, the moment you strap something on from Georgia and head out on the Navy, it's an adventure. That's what they say about the Navy. Let me answer this though. Why did you decide to join the Navy rather than the Army and the Marines or the Marines?
Okay. Are you ready for the answer? Here we go.
Yep.
I was actually in Air Force ROTC, and I went down to join the Air Force.
Yeah.
I missed the Air Force exam by 3 points, but as I was leaving the station, the Army and the Marine Corps guys said, hey, you know, you qualify to join either branch. And I asked this one simple question. I said, do you guys sleep outside in the woods? And they said, yes. I went, that's it, not doing it. I'm going to join the Navy.
Hey, good answer, you know, good answer. That was a good one.
Yeah.
What was the most exciting memory for you about being in the Navy and the places you have visited and stationed?
Wow, that's a tough question because every duty station had its challenges. I would say my absolute best was in Bermuda, is where I was stationed there for 3 years.
Uh-huh.
I met and married the love of my life that I'm still with today after 36 years. My most challenging career was my most challenging duty station was as the base ordnance officer in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Every day was a challenge. Every day was intense. 7 days a week, 24/7. It didn't turn off. That was for 3 years of just intensity that I never endured in my life. And I think the most revelation tour was when I was on board USS Kincaid, where we had a collision at sea. One of the officers, four of my best friends, were swept out into the Straits of Malacca, and was lucky to save them. But that was a defining moment in my life, and that's when I think the system really became clear to me and how forgiving it could be.
Very, very interesting. You were in the Straits of Malacca. Did you ever get a chance to visit any of the peninsula at all?
Absolutely. We went to Singapore. Unfortunately, we had no other choice but to go to Singapore. We had a big old 58-foot hole in the side of our ship. So we were able to prevent the ship from sinking, and we were able to limp into Singapore. And so we did it in Singapore, got a chance to, I'm not sure if we went to Malaysia or not, but we did go to Pakistan, Karachi, and then to the Philippines and some of those places over there. So,
very, very interesting. Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, I mean, somewhere along the line, as you grew up in the ranks in the Navy, then you became, I'm just using this lightly, and I hope you take it that way, the bad boy. Because when I say bad boy here, because you are the disciplined guy, the chief warrant officer. So, you know, that's a toughie for a lot of people, I guess.
Well, that was just so funny because I never wanted to be a chief warrant officer, nor did I ever want to be a chief petty officer, because I wanted to go straight to the top. I didn't want to take the steps. I wanted to go once I realized what I was doing. Hey, I was ready to become an admiral, you know, and skip everything
there you go.
In between.
Yeah, yes, sir.
But I'm so glad that I became a chief, and I'm so glad that I became a chief warrant officer because in the Navy, chief warrant officers are assigned at any position. So any job that's 05 or below, you get assigned to, which is kind of cool. So, and what's really cool about it is that some of the unrestricted officers don't know how to handle you, so you kind of get to do what you want to do, which made it very interesting.
Very, very interesting. When did you realize there are rules in winning?
So I actually started figuring it out when I was in Georgia. I didn't understand that it was rules, but I understand it was something that was going on. Just how you had to position yourself to make yourself and put yourself in an advantageous situation. So as I matured a little more, I think about midways in the Navy is when I realized that you have to have a set of rules and guidelines to follow because, you know, going through life, not establishing a course will just send you in a tailspin. So it began in Georgia, for sure.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. So how did you feel the very first time you consciously won playing by the rules?
So it was a revelation. And the first time playing by the rules was when I realized that there was a set of rules and that there was a system in place. So when I was an E5, a brand new E5 petty officer in the Navy, I looked around and saw that there was some things that I had to do. There was a system I had to follow, and I did. And I took the ball in my own court, and I went from just making E5 to getting commissioned as an officer within 7 years, hitting every rank in between. And that's when I knew, and that solidified, that there's definitely a system in play. And if you use it correctly and play by it, you can't do nothing but win.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. Why did you decide to write "The System is Unforgiving"? Play by the rules and win.
So, interesting enough, I wrote the book first, and then the title kind of appeared. It wasn't as if I had the title first. What I've learned, and so to answer your question directly, I was asked with folks that knew me and knew some of my journey. They kept saying, "Alan, you need to write a book. Alan, you've had an amazing life. You need to write a book. You need to write a book." And I thought about it, but, you know, of course, that's a big challenge to write a book.
Right.
And I ended up, through just happenstance, and meeting my book coach, Kim O'Hara. And Kim, my goodness, is an amazing individual. She's like a drill sergeant, and she wouldn't let me off the hook. And she said, "You have an amazing story that you have to tell." And so there it is. And she stayed on me until I got it done.
Fantastic. What would you like for the readers to gain from reading "The System is Unforgiving"?
Oh, man, that is an awesome question. Here's what the takeaway is. Number one, life doesn't owe you anything. Two, you can't take anything personal. And three, you have to set your course, and you have to stay the course if you want to achieve anything in life. And it's really that simple. It's no one else's fault. You can't be a victim. You just have to just stand up tall, take the good with the bad, but you have to keep moving.
Fantastic. So please share with us the 15 rules that you mentioned in the book.
Absolutely. So the 15 rules, and they're not that very simple. Rule number one is seek and identify and appreciate your mentor. And that's all about, in most cases, your mentors will find you. But when you do find a mentor, they were placed in your life to help you achieve greatness. I mean, they're there to push you and to make you bring out those qualities that you're afraid to show. You have to stay focused on your objective, and you have to continuously reevaluate your game plan, because what made you successful today doesn't mean that same thing is going to make you successful tomorrow. So you have to look around and see what's trending, what's changing, and then you have to be on it. And that's by constantly surveying. That's rule number three, constantly surveying your environment to ensure that every day you know where you're at. So when you set your goals for 5 years, day two of your first 5 years, you have to make sure that you're moving in the right direction. Four, never become pompous or arrogant. The quickest thing to shut people down and they won't support you if you become super arrogant and ungrateful and just think that because you had a win that now you're on top. That's the biggest detriment in anyone's path, I believe. You have to be humble, and you have to be grateful in all your small achievements. And with that, it's not important to win. You know, I'm a very competitive person, but the biggest lesson I learned, that it's best to let others win, because even if you know you could have won, you have to encourage the team around you. You have to respect others' opinions and others' thoughts. And maybe it's not yours. However, it may be different, but it'll get you to the same point. So that's what you have to focus on. Own up on your mistakes, right? So if you do something wrong, step up to the plate and take it, you know, but don't take the fall for someone else. Don't be the victim of someone else's mistakes, because that could also just take you out. And never be too demanding. Sometimes, as my grandmother always told me, you can get more with a spoonful of sugar than you can with a spoonful of salt. So you kind of nudge folks, point them in the right direction, and then you just kind of let it marinate and let it get to where it needs to go. And you'll eventually get to what you want. You'll get there. Again, be flexible to change, because we're in a very changing environment. But stay focused and stand your ground ethically. Never, never, never let someone take you outside of your integrity level. And as I say today when I talk to other companies, I tell them right in the very beginning,
The one thing I will never compromise is my integrity. I'm not going to lie, cheat, or steal to get ahead. It's not worth it. So you have to stay your ground ethically. Stay close to your circle. It's always good to not have a large circle. When you do, to me and what I've learned in life, when you're out there and you're center stage and you got all these friends, all that means is a lot of trouble because now they bring a lot of things to you that you wouldn't have if you wasn't in a large circle. So keep your circle small. Keep your circle with people that you know you can trust. Be discerning about whom you trust with your ambitions because, again, not everybody is going to be happy for your successes. So you want to make sure that a good mentor, you hang around the right people, and you hang around people that's like-minded, that's going in the direction that you're going. You can't take anything personal. And what I mean by that, walk around and how bad, you know, people are treating you or how bad it's, you know, that doesn't buy you anything. That just wastes your time. It takes that valuable, precious time that you have away from you because you're waking on something that you're not in control of. And don't let haters distract you because, again, you're going to have folks that's not always 100% for you. But that's okay. You use that negativity to your advantage because once you see it, you know what it is, and you use it to catapult to the next level by getting away from them or pointing you in the right direction you need to go. Cut ties quickly. When you're out there in the world and you're doing things and someone's not going in your direction or don't see your vision, you don't try to convince someone to see things your way. If they don't see it, chances are they never will see it. Cut that tie quickly and keep moving. Stay around people that are in that's heading in your direction, that's doing the things that you're doing. Always keep a little side money. You know, you never know when an emergency might happen. That's very important. But I think my last rule is so critical, and that is if you're married in a relationship, you have to have effective communications. I tell people today that my wife and I have been married over 36 years. We have two beautiful kids. We call ourselves a high-performance family. But we do that because we communicate. My wife and I has never to this day had one argument. We've never raised our voice at each other. We've never said unkind things to each other. And we've had this is not storybook, this is reality. We've had a blissful relationship because we respect each other. We're different. We understand that we're different. I'm an extrovert. She's an introvert. But we work, but we communicate. We think that's still key. That's the 15 rules of how I live my life.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's really, really wonderful. We're going to get into some of it a little bit later in the show. But I want to come back during your years of, trying to find your compass. That's during the teenage years, so to speak. You were in the Air Force, ROTC, and so forth. Who had the most influence on you when you were growing up?
When I was a young man, I was lost. I was just kind of stumbling around. Mm-hmm. In my book, I talk about a man by the name of Albert McCoy. Mm-hmm. When I joined the Navy, for some reason, Albert saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And he just kind of took me under his wings. In the Navy, we called them Sea Daddies back in the day. And he was my mentor, and he beat me up mentally daily. But his beating was out of love, and I knew it was out of love. Mm-hmm. And he really instilled some things in me that was really good. But I take this back from my biggest influence is my grandmother. Her name is Alan Green, spelled the same way as mine. My grandmother was from Georgia in a small town, but she was a force to be reckoned with. And she gave me nuggets that are still instilling these today. And so she was, I would have to say, my biggest influence. And then Albert would be second. He was the one that, once I started life, Grandmother Foundation, Albert was more life journey kind of a thing.
Very interesting. Yeah. And the foundation is important, though, because I think that's the tender age. You know what I'm talking about? Where between 12 and 18 or so, because there's a period of time where nobody in our immediate family, they are pretty much dumb. You know, we're looking for answers, but the answers are actually within around us, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. By the way, you're listening to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. Our podcasts are available on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitches Radio, Blueberry Podcasting, TuneIn Radio, Mixcloud, Podchaser, Listen Notes, and Hot Hopper. I'm Johnny Tan, your host, and my guest for this morning is Alan Maxwell. He is the president and CEO of Army2Max, a defense contractor business with 100 employees in 9 states. Alan is also the USA Today and Wall Street Journal best-selling author of The System is Unforgiving, Play by the Rules and Win. We're having a conversation about his remarkable life's journey, his multi-award-winning book, and his passion for mentoring students to succeed in life, regardless of the challenges they face. Alan, let's talk about the book. You mentioned a little bit about how you rule number one came about to you when you met the wonderful gentleman when you were in the Navy. How was that transition like? Because you're looking at, you know, it's one thing to think about it on the mainland, and now you are actually at sea. And I might add, it's not like, you know, we're there for 3 days and I'm back. How was that transition like for you?
In terms of you becoming
being
my mentor?
At sea. Yes, with your mentor, and then the fact that you were at sea, you know, for that prolonged period of time.
You learn very quickly that it doesn't take much to survive. It doesn't take much to satisfy your Maslow's needs. All you need is a bed and 3 meals a day. That's it.
You know, would you at any given time say, maybe I should have stuck with the Army?
Yeah. Well, so the answer to that is never. Never thought about that. You know, it's always been nice being in air conditioning ships and all that stuff. Being at sea was an interesting challenge, but it was that you worked and you played war games all the time. So it was always
right.
You didn't have time to sit and self-reflect. There was always something going on. And the Navy does a good job of keeping your mind filled with things to do. Mm-hmm.
I understand. One, you talked about in your book continuously reevaluating our game plan. It's a must, okay? And the reason why I'm bringing this, because it's kind of fun when you look at it, because in the Navy, you know, when you get on deck, the view never changed. So how would it be able to reevaluate our game plan, so to speak, and thinking like, wait a minute, now, am I need to stand in a different direction here, so to speak?
So I'm going to use that as the horizontal viewpoint. But then you also have to reflect on your detailed viewpoint, which means...
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe the horizon never changes, but what's immediately around you does.
Right.
And that is, you know, what is it going to take to get promoted? What jobs are you doing? How are you looking at being evaluated in terms of doing a great job? So, again, keep the horizon in view, but you have to look right in front of you every second of the day to make sure you're heading in the right direction. And that's a very
that's
good
true.
Observation. But an option,
that's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. And that's the reason why I asked that question, because it's interesting. There is a cliche word, you know, the devil is in the details, but to me, the opportunity is in the details.
And let me add to that. It says an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So when you put those two together, you need to be always involved in something, not allowing yourself that time to think of the nonsensical things, you know, the things that distract you from achieving. And it's easy to do. You can easily get caught up on self-pity. You can easily get caught up on, you know, oh, the system isn't treating me fair. They don't like me and all that nonsense. And so you have to not let that interfere into your head. You have to stay focused and stay keep your apertures open. You have to stay focused for sure. Yeah. It's not easy. It's not an easy road, but it's a good, successful road, especially on this end of it.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. How was your transition like being in the military, where it is structured, very structured in many ways, and then coming to the real world, and where, you know, people may say what they want to say, but they don't necessarily mean what they have to say, and it's very difficult to hold them accountable for what they say.
So the military taught me a lot of valuable lessons. One of the things that I did while I was in the military is that whenever I spent 9 years overseas, I was forced basically, because I was overseas, to live on military bases. Mm-hmm. But when I was stationed stateside, I got as far away from the military as possible so I can assimilate with non-military people just to understand how that world was around me.
Right.
And so when I transitioned out of the military, it was an easy transition. The biggest aha moment was when I retired, it was, I could think for myself, I don't have to ask permission. Mm-hmm. And I went crazy when that happened. It was like, I want everything.
Yeah, not guidelines, but no more restraint. Yes, yes, that's interesting.
Yes,
very,
yes.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How do you view adversity?
I look at adversity as a means to improve. I think challenge, I thrive on challenges. I tell the people that work for me is that when we run into a situation, I don't care. I honestly don't care how we got into a situation. What I care the most about is how we get out of the situation, and that's where I want to spend my time. I don't want to sit around and blame anybody for doing something wrong and not doing the correct thing over there. I like to say, hey, we're in the middle of the lake and the boat's sinking. It doesn't matter why the boat is sinking. It doesn't matter how the boat is sinking. It matters how we get to shore. And so that's how I handle adversity. I don't spend time worrying about the now situation. I worry about the future, where we're going. That's mm-hmm. how I handle it. Yeah.
What I like about you talk about in the book is you mentioned about ensuring ourselves each day where we are at in life. And that, again, is talking about the opportunity is in the detail. But when you look at yourself over the years, were there pivotal moments in your life that this particular principle, rule, really made an impact on you, where you were able to get up one day and realize that, wait a minute now, this is where I'm at in life, and is it in alignment with what I'm wanting to do? Do you have a particular pivotal moment that you can share with us with regards to that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd give you a couple of them. One mm-hmm. was when I decided to retire from the Navy. Mm-hmm. My goal was to spend 30 years in the Navy. I was being promoted, and I decided that being with my wife and kids were more important than the promotion. And so I had to weigh that and make that decision. So I chose to turn down the promotion and get out of the Navy. That was a major defining moment. My other defining moment was when I left the federal government and started this company. I was doing quite a bit at my level in the government, but it wasn't gratifying. And it got to the point to where I just felt that I had so much more to offer that was just being restricted. So I went home one night and I said to my wife, I said, hey, I'm going to leave the federal government and I'm going to start my own business. And Johnny, this is what my wife said to me. This was when we were married 25 years. Mm-hmm. She said, in the 25 years that we've been married, I never questioned your decision and I'm not about to start now.
Yeah.
And when she told me that, that was so empowering.
Right.
That I didn't have a solid plan, but I knew
right.
I had to make a decision.
Right.
And I did. Never
That's fantastic.
Back. It was the best decision for me. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. Well, Alan, I mean, think about it. I mean, you know, you were always in a structured situation, plus that sort of, you know, you're protected. Everything is good,
mm-hmm.
right? It doesn't matter what we mm-hmm. have. You know, it might be a snowstorm next day. I could still go to work. I still got a paycheck. and now you're venturing out of that, you know, comfort zone, so to speak. And that's fantastic. It's good that your wife didn't say, are you out of your mind? And but that's fantastic. That's really, really wonderful. Why is letting others win sometimes benefit us in the long run? And can you share a particular experience in that?
Oh, absolutely. So
again, the only person that we could be accountable is for us.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are assessing where you're at every day, that's also assessing the people that's around you. So let's take for instances, you're around someone that I call them a power broker or a shot caller or someone that's a decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have your career in their hands. They come and instruct you to do something. You have a choice. You can either do it or you don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
In the federal government, I had a boss that was intimidated by my presence. I had a choice. I could have rammed it down his throat and just showed him that I was smarter than he was, or
mm-hmm.
I could sit back and let him be the shot caller, be the decision maker, take the decision, and then alter it just a little bit to make it mine. So he
mm-hmm.
felt good about making the decision. He felt good that I listened to him, and he was very happy with the result. But in reality, it was my idea all along.
Mm-hmm.
I just
mm-hmm.
let him feel that it was his idea, and it was okay. I didn't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I lived my life that way. Mm-hmm.
And it's a classic example. You know, you may lose a couple of battles here and there, but you win the war on the long haul.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's having self-assurance as to who you are. And you know, if you have to get up in the morning and kiss yourself, then already you've already lost the battle.
Very interesting. Now, you talk about taking ownership, and this is very, very important. How is taking ownership of our mistakes critical to our success? Because especially, you know, in today's world, when someone, when there's something wrong, you know, we do the moonwalk real quick.
Right.
Trying to get away from it.
So for me, the most critical and the most important moment in my life was being the ship driver on a ship
mm-hmm.
that was at a collision at sea where we had a ship running to the side of it. I was the second in charge on the bridge, but I was the guy driving the ship. It wasn't my fault that we got hit by another ship. The answer is yes and no. There were some things I could have done if I was willing to take some severe risk, which meaning taking risk. So here's the situation. Had I been very aggressive and nothing happened, I would have been the extreme bad guy and lost my career. Had I waited for someone else to give me direction and we get a ship in the side, then, you know, we lost the person before my friends were out at sea.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I struggle with today from the sense of what was the right decision. But not once
mm-hmm.
did I ever blame anybody. I took
mm-hmm.
ownership of that. I took ownership saying that I made a decision. Right, wrong, or indifferent, I made a decision. And the
mm-hmm.
outcome was what it was. And so from that, Johnny, that's what got me commissioned as an officer because
sure.
the decision that I made. So that was a very critical decision, and it was a very defining moment in my life and a deciding moment in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And again,
mm-hmm.
that was 20 years ago, but I still, to this day, question that moment, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But
that's very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think,
yeah.
you know, it's the idea of being able to rebound, and self-acceptance is the most important thing because we have our comfort zone, we have our upper and lower limits. But the most important thing about ownership to me is like you just said, it's like, okay, wait a minute, this is me. I can't point anywhere else. I have an opportunity to make it right.
Absolutely.
What is your definition of being too demanding? I thought that was really cool. Like, don't be too demanding.
Oh, we could talk for the rest of this month on that area. you know, as I'm sure you've seen, there are people that we meet that think that they have all the answers,
mm-hmm.
and they're really not interested in hearing your answers because
right.
they're driven in such a direction that they want to go. That they just want you to just follow. And just to get off topic a little bit, I think our last administration was a perfect example of being very
mm-hmm.
demanding and not
mm-hmm.
letting anyone else play on the field with them. Everyone wants to be a part of the team. And if you don't seek suggestions or advice from the teammates, the team is going to fail. It's not going to be a team. It's going to be an I failure. It's not going to be a team. So when you're too demanding, it shuts people down, and they're not going to give you their ideas, their thoughts, or their creativity. They're going to see it's just like micromanaging. You're going to get exactly what you micromanage. Absolutely. So, yeah.
Well,
it's
so true.
It's always nice to give others an opportunity to think.
Very true. Very true. You're listening to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. Our podcasts are available on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Blueberry Podcasting, TuneIn Radio, Mixcloud, Podchaser, Listen Notes, and Hot Poffer. My guest is Alan Maxwell. He is the president and CEO of Army2Max, a defense contractor business with 100 employees in 9 states. Alan is also the USA Today and Wall Street Journal bestselling author of The System is Unforgiving, Play by the Rules and Win. We're having a conversation about his remarkable life's journey, his multi-award winning book, and his passion for mentoring students to succeed in life regardless of challenges they face. I'm your host, Johnny Tan. Speaking about students, I know you do a lot of volunteer work, sir. Tell us a little bit about it.
Oh, man, Johnny, I spent a lot of time working with them. We've granted several wishes for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I mentor, I'm a part of this organization called the Eagles Organization. We are comprised of CEOs and senior government executives, where we focus on foster youth, trying to help them transition out of the foster care program at the age of 18 and into life and assimilate into jobs and all the positive things, families and that sort of things. The sad part and the sad statistics is that the way the foster program works is when a kid turns 18, the system shuts them down, kicks them out, and they're on their own. So if they don't have the right tools or the right goals, they end up in the penal system, and you know where that leads them to. So we try to grab them before that happens. We also focus on college students. One of the biggest challenges that we see right now today is college students today go to college, but they don't know what to do after college or how to transition out of college. So we provide that mentorship and also job opportunities for them to understand that, okay, now you have a degree, now what? Just because you have a degree in kinesiology doesn't mean you can't work as a program manager. And let them understand that, you know, your degree is your bus ticket to get you to the next level. Doesn't necessarily mean that's your career field for the rest of your life. So we demystify that whole thought process. Right now, I'm in the process. I just wrote a letter of recommendations for a young man that's in college that also I let him intern at my company. He just got accepted in the SpaceX program as an aerospace engineer. Another young lady, and I'm writing a letter as we speak right now, is going to San Diego State University. She's done some amazing things. We put together a nice little program to support the adjustment for the foster youth. We gave over 100 backpacks full of all kind of goodies to these kids that need these things. And so now she's doing some wonderful things and is being accepted into yet another program to accelerate her journey. So I sit and they call me all the time asking for advice. They give me a scenario, and I don't give them solutions. I give them options. I give them options. You know, if you go down Highway A, this is an expectation. If you go down Highway B, C, so forth and so on. And I think that's what all youth need today. They really need mentorship and guidance. And it's not taking anything away from the parents. It's just giving them another viewpoint in life, a safe viewpoint in life.
Right. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the what I coined as, you know, the university of life. It's ongoing.
Absolutely.
And so having the opportunity to speak with someone that has been down the trail makes a whole lot of difference. That helps you. And of course, the ultimate decision, as you had mentioned, is not about giving them solutions. I mean, you do give them solutions through which door that they ultimately select. But that decision is based on their upper and lower limits. So that's beautiful.
Exactly. Absolutely, for sure.
Who belongs in our inner circle?
Oh, man. So for me, my inner circle is very tight. It's my wife and my two kids. That is the inner internal circle. But we have a very strong bond that we developed, and I attribute that to the military because we had to depend on each other through thick and thin.
Yeah.
When I step out of that, my circle probably comprised of probably about four people, and these are all former military guys that I served with that we've gone through some things together.
Right.
But my circle, if I call one of them up today and says, before I can get it out of my mouth, they would say, where do I send it? What do you need? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
That's the circle that I'm in. And so it's a very small circle of friends.
Right. Right.
I have a tremendous amount of acquaintances, thousands of acquaintances, but two friends, very small. Yeah.
That's right. That's true. Well, you know, just picture a dartboard. You have that red dot in the middle. That's what counts
right there.
And so true. Very, very true. When is taking things personally a form of motivation? I know you said don't take things personally. You're wasting your time. But when is taking things personally a form of motivation in this case?
That's a very, very good question. And I want to say something that'll just probably lighten you up here a little bit.
Okay.
For example, I'm a very analytical person.
Mm-hmm.
So early in my life, I was doing some things that probably wasn't the best that one could do. This is before I met my wife. And I started drinking a lot. And I had someone from an observation come up to me and say, hey, it looks like you're drinking a lot. And my response to that person was, you know, have I ever been late on, you know, on watch? They know. Have I ever been late to work? No. Mm-hmm. And my uniform ever been bad? No. I said, well, stay out of my business.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you, the fact that that person said that to me, oh, I couldn't sleep at night. I internalized that so bad. And it changed me. It said, okay, I'm done. I stopped because I took that very personal because of the fact that you saw a major flaw and you saw that the direction I wanted to go and the things that I was doing didn't align. So that's when I took it personal, and that's when I made a difference in that. So when folks say things to me, I listen very, very carefully to what's being said to me. And when something is said to me that's not aligned in the direction that I'm going, I take that personally. But the person that says it to me will never know how personal I took it. The things that I don't take personal is, you know, someone's criticism or whatever. That's an opinion, and that's what it is. But if there's a constructive statement made that's going to be something that's going to benefit me, then I do take that very personal, and then I do make the corrections that's needed to get on the right track, for sure.
Fantastic. That's a great example, because a lot of times we need to hear something that we need to hear, so to speak.
Yes. Okay.
And because we don't see it ourselves. And then not only that, the way to measure it as well, you can see whether that person is genuinely saying something for your best interest. He's got nothing to gain out of it.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. Yep.
How do you define effective communication in a marriage? I know you talk about how loving your relationship is, so maybe you can share the secrets with us.
Oh, very good. So effective communication is very simple to me. I call it looking through my set of glasses versus looking through their set of glasses. For an example, yes, we've never had an argument, but we've not always seen things eye to eye. So, in reality, is that I listen to my wife's rationale and viewpoint as to why she made the decisions that she made. If my first reaction is I disagree with it, I have to sit back and understand why, you know, and then if it was her why made sense to her, then I have to accept that because that's all she has. That's what she did. I can't go back to her and say, well, you were all wrong because you didn't do this, this, and this. because she may not have had that knowledge, understanding to make that determination. So I have to accept the fact that she made the decision based on knowledge, understanding, and you know, maturity, education, you name it, as to why she made the best decision she could make with what she had. So I have to accept that. So now that I understand that, I get back and say, yeah, I understand it. And then I say, well, here's my perspective as to why I didn't align with you at first. And then she understands that, you know. But the main thing is respecting each other. And real last thing I think was critical, I asked my grandfather on her side, mm-hmm. when he had his 50th anniversary with his wife, I asked him, I said, Grandpa Rice, how do you stay married to someone for 50 years? And his mm-hmm. answer was simple. He said, I have no expectations of my wife. Mm-hmm. And when he said that, that just rang a loud bell to me, because so many people destroy right. relationships because of expectations. But again, we're all different. No matter how much we think we are alike, we're all different. And you have to
right.
respect that. Yeah.
So
you got to talk about it, too. You got to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's hard to talk about, you got to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. What I'm hearing from you, the most important thing is that you have to give the person the opportunity to speak. And for like I use this coin term in terms of listening someone into existence, because that's very, very important, because they have an opinion. And obviously, whatever decision they made it based on an informed decision at that time. That doesn't mean that you can't change it with additional you know, latest information
exactly.
and details and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. 100%. Yep.
Is it ever too late to play by the rules and win?
It's never too late to play by the rules and win. Never too late. And that's the beauty about life. Change is change is change. If you have a desire to change, all you have to do, as Nike say, just do it. You know, just do it. You know, you have to do it. And that's a scary decision to make, because if you're in your comfort zone,
right.
you know, change sometimes takes you out of your comfort zone. But
yeah.
in order to make the change, you have to make that decision, and you have to stick with it, despite what others might think. You have to do it. It's never too late.
So true. Very true. Looking back in introspection and the structured life you lived with the U.S. government and then being on your own, so to speak, what was the greatest side of the equation in terms of that structured, you know, concept that you were exposed to that really helped you in the business world?
So, you know, throughout my 15 years, there's a common theme, and it's all about your decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've worked for others for over 30 years in the military, mm-hmm. in the federal government, the South. But the greatest faction, I think, is when you bet on yourself and you know that every decision that you make, you're either going to reap the benefits or suffer the consequences. Putting mm-hmm. the ownership on your back, I think, is the best defining moment and the best thing that ever happened to me, because it really, really, really brings out what did you learn through life? Did you really,
yeah.
or did you just pass through? You know, so I had to dig deep into my life experiences on decisions, on situations, on
mm-hmm.
relationships, on networking. You know, all these things that I talk about, my 15 rules, are all the things that I had to pull from today in
mm-hmm.
order to have a successful company. And respecting others, creating an environment that's conducive to the direction you want to go, have a team of people that believe in you and you believe in them. All those things are the key to making that defining moment. So that would be my answer to that question.
Very interesting. And you mentioned these are our own personal habits, or, you know, these are what defines us, right? And so now we are in the what I call main street, I guess, in some ways. But in all actuality, this personal discipline of who we are, that's what makes us successful in a structured organization, in the military as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, the thing about the military, it's straight in your face. It's like mm-hmm. either do this, this, and this, and you'll succeed, or you do that, that, and that, and you're going to fail. There's no
right.
in between. If you, right. either you participate or you don't, which is good. That's life. You know,
mm-hmm.
either you participate in life or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
But the
Beautiful.
Military holds you accountable for your actions, and that's what's important.
That's right. So true. Where can someone go to get more information about you, buy your book, and keep up with your latest happenings?
So go to my website, alanmaxwellauthor.com. That has all my latest information, how to purchase my book, how to get in touch with me. I'm certainly open for mentorship. I'm open for interns and things of that nature in the company. And again, I'm all about giving back. I feel very blessed. I feel that that being a deacon and a servant of the Lord has blessed me tremendously to give back and not to be the pompous guy, not to be the arrogant guy, not to be the self-centered individual, but to be the giver and the sharer and the person that just respects mankind and know that, hey, we can't do this by ourselves. And I'm just a small, small, small grain of sand on a huge beach. So that's the way I look at my life. And I change what I can change that's around me, the things that I can't change. I accept it, and I just try to live life the best I can and treat people right. So.
Wonderful. And
mm-hmm.
by the way, I mean, I strongly recommend your book. I you know, what's interesting about it, you know, one would think, you know, oh, well, it's a business thing. It tells us exactly what the laws and rules of life and so forth. Yes, but you have some really wonderful insider information here that you sure did. You didn't have to pass the Pentagon to write all this stuff.
this is my personal experience. So it's not like I'm studying top secret, you know, but yeah.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, I mean, the only thing they can say, well, that one slipped by me, you know?
Yeah.
And it's out there. But no, it's a beautiful book. It's very exciting. It's a wonderful read in terms of your life's journey and the experiences that you have and you share with others as well. And then not only that, I mean, it's just the idea, if you want to know what life is like in the Navy and so forth, working for the federal government in a specific area of interest, this is the book for you. It's fascinating. It's really wonderful. What is next for you, sir?
Oh, I don't know. I'm getting pounded about writing another book. And, they say the first book is hard, but the second one is even harder. So the focus is on growing my business. I'm reaching out, doing some different business strategies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am thinking about someday, you know, heading to the beach and traveling the world and just really, really taking time with the wife and just doing good things. So it's been a long journey. It's been a hard journey. So I want to try to relax a little bit and do the fun stuff.
Right.
So, yeah.
So true. As we close this hour, since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Live the life that God gave you and do it to the best of your ability, and don't let anything deter you or stop you, and do the things that make you happy, you know, that doesn't affect others in a negative way. That would be my words of wisdom.
Fantastic. That's really, really wonderful. Alan, thank you, sir, for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday morning, February 16. My guest will be Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be having a conversation about their latest release, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Making Me Time, 101 Stories About Self-Care and Balance. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchenTalkRadio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Alan, sir, it's been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a very blessed day.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you for having me on your show. You have a great day as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.